It's the City of Angels. That's where I'm chilling right now. I see my boy Tim Legler being Daddy Legs right there. I see the wonderful Andrea Carter. We've got smiles on our face. It's a beautiful morning. Look at the kid. I don't know if you know this about me, Andrea, but Stevie ain't little kids. He sure does. He sure does. In Southern California, it's supposed to be sunshine, but the skies are gray because the Los Angeles Clippers decided to show up on national television and stink up the state of California. I mean, my God, what a disgraceful performance. And that's just one of the things on my mind. I got a few other things going, and I got Legs and Andrea and the kids watching too. Remember, as I just said, Stevie ain't love the kids. He sure does. He sure does. First Takes in the house.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome into First Take on this fine Thursday. I'm Christine Williamson here from Molly. We got Stephen A. We got Legs. We got Drea. Good morning, everybody. And also, your son's name, is, Legs, is Caden?
Caden, that's right, yeah.
Shout out to Caden.
Shout out to Caden.
Beautiful. All right, let's get things rolling, people. How about it? Despite being sick and playing on a sprained right ankle, Luka Doncic did not slow down. The Don scored 20 of his 35 points in the second half and added 10 assists and 7 rebounds, helping the Mavs to a 123-93 win over the Clippers, putting them on the brink of a second round berth with a 3-2 lead in the series. Now, on the other side, the Clippers stars did not shine in last night's Game 5 loss to Luka and Dallas. Paul George, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook combined for just 28 points on 8-for-36 shooting. All right, Stephen A., I'm going to start with you since you said it was nice and not sunshiny there in L.A. How disappointing were PG-13, Harden, and Russ last night?
It was a catastrophe. There's no way around this. And listen, I want to say this off the top. And you can put Andre and Legs up on the screen because I want to say this. I want to see their face when I say this. I want wholesale changes in Los Angeles. Steve Ballmer just needs to blow it up. Enough's enough, okay? Enough's enough. Now, we don't expect now if there's something change, a change takes place, and somehow, some way, a Ty Lue squad, because he's fully capable of pulling this off because he's an exceptional coach, turns things around, they come out and win Game 6 and they come back to win Game 7, that may be a different story, but I don't expect that to happen. We see James Harden. We've been raving about it. We saw him perform in a couple of games this series. We saw what he did in a couple of games without Kawhi Leonard, averaging over 30, and then what happens last night? 7 points? Really? Really? This is what we're talking about here. What the hell was that about? Russell Westbrook, Lord, since he got himself ejected in Game 3, he's been a no-show. We got to look at that particular situation. And then you ultimately watch Paul George struggle the way that he struggled last night. This is what I'm trying to say about the Los Angeles Clippers. At some point in time, you can't be about trying to compete with the Los Angeles Lakers. Laker Nation is Laker Nation. They got their fan base and what have you. But the bottom line is you're not going to be them. You got to establish your own. And in order to establish your own, you got to have dependable bodies to rely upon. Kawhi Leonard is your star. I want to state this for the record again. Nobody's questioning the sincerity or the legitimacy of his injury. We know he's injured, but he is the absolute worst superstar you could possibly have. Ever, because he's not available for 48% of his regular season games. He's not available for more than 30% of the playoff games, okay? He seems to miss it when it counts most, and he does absolutely positively nothing to market your brand. And because he doesn't do anything to market your brand, because he doesn't do anything to market the sport, all of a sudden, now you got to rely on other players to come through for you. Paul George is spectacular one day. One day he's ordinary. James Harden is spectacular one day, another time, always during the playoffs, he's an absolute no-show. They're 4-8 in playoff games where James Harden scores 10 or less points. How the hell are there 12 different games where you score 10 or less points in a playoff game when you're one of the most prolific scorers the game of basketball has ever seen? These are the question marks. And then to have the audacity, the unmitigated gall to come out there and to look lifeless. I mean, they got blown out last night. They got blown out last night. Ladies and gentlemen, it wasn't like Luka dropped 35 and Kyrie had 40. Kyrie had 14 points. Max Kleber comes off the bench in 19 minutes and hit 5 threes. Luka did what he said he was going to do. No answer from the Los Angeles Clippers whatsoever. I saw people sitting courtside. Y'all thought they had popcorn bags. No, they didn't. They had bags there to throw up in. They wanted to vomit because they saw the Los Angeles Clippers stink up the joint the way that they did. It wasn't popcorn in those bags. People were practically throwing up with what the hell they saw. It was an atrocious performance, a lifeless performance, no excuse whatsoever in a pivotal game five, knowing you got to go back to Dallas for game six, knowing what you did to them in game four, knowing you could beat this team, to come out in front of that fan base, which was stacked last night, the building was filled, and you still put up a performance like that. It was disgraceful. Disgraceful. And if they get their butts whipped in game six, not only will people not be surprised, they'll say thank you for mercifully putting an end to this season. Steve Ballmer needs to rethink who he has there as his personnel. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. Period.
I agree, Stephen A. The performance was a disaster. And for me, it was how uninspired they looked out there on the floor. Uninspired to defend, uninspired to play. They looked uninspired on the bench. I didn't see very many guys getting up and trying to talk life into them. And when you talk about Kawhi Leonard, what is he known for? Being a more quiet guy. He's not very outspoken. He's not the type of guy that's going to ignite this team with energy, even when he's not playing. He might go over and say some things to them quietly. He might tell them things he's seeing, but this team needed to be ignited with energy, and they didn't get it from anyone. Usually that's Russ, who can come in and ignite the team with his performance on the floor. He struggled knocking down shots. He struggled with his efficiency. Those three, Westbrook, Harden, and PG, 8 of 36 combined, is just not going to get it done. But to me, Stephen A., when your superstar is out, you want to play great for them. You want to play great and hopefully get a chance to get them back on the floor. You want to play inspired basketball on your home court for your superstar, and you don't see that happening. You didn't see that happen to a dramatic effect with this Clippers team. This was an opportunity for them to step up. After Harden and PG played extremely well in the last game, they just dropped the ball on this one. But to me, it was the dropped shoulders, the uninspired. Like, they had no life. They had no energy.
Listen, both of you did a beautiful job summing this all up. And I'm going to start with this. Stephen A., you and I have been doing this a long time. Dre and I haven't worked together as much. And specifically on this topic, Stephen A., you and I have been on the show how many times talking about James Harden in big spots.
Countless.
And nobody's been harder on him than me. And last night was exactly what you expect from James Harden in a moment like that. And it's not just what happened in Philadelphia, because people want to point to the two 40-point games he had against Boston last year. Well, he had five other games where he averaged 11 points a game and shot 25% from the field in a seven-game series, including getting annihilated on the road in a game seven. Go all the way back to his Houston days. He had moments where literally, you can't believe what you're watching, because you're talking about a dude that led the league in scoring when he was in Houston and then decides on a given night in a playoff game, a pivotal game, he's just not going to shoot the basketball in the first quarter. And you go, where is the dude that I watched all year? And then you look at the coaches, Doc Rivers, Mike D'Antoni, scratching their heads, trying to figure out how are we supposed to win when a guy that dominates the ball to that extent plays like that, with that little aggression and just lifeless in his approach to the game. And this is exactly what James Harden has given us to expect in these spots. Now, Paul George as well has had moments like this, but I think to a lesser degree, because here's what I'll say about James Harden as a superstar talent, which he is. His floor is so low that on a given night, when he hits that floor and goes into these dark places where he just gives you nothing offensively, you can't overcome it because he's got the ball too much. You need him to play close to the level that he does at his best. He doesn't have to be great every night, and that team's got a lot of help on it. But you can't play like you did last night, where you literally don't show. Now, the last thing I'm gonna say about it is this. I don't think it would have mattered last night, because what you saw in Luka Doncic was a superstar playing with supreme level of control and confidence. He looked poked every one of his teammates in the eye and said, I got this, watch. And he dismantled them. He controlled the pace. He controlled the possessions. He was decisive. He got to his mid-range, didn't take quite as many of those step-back threes that he wasn't hitting in the first four games. He got what he wanted. He owned them on that end of the floor. It calmed everybody down on his team and then allowed everybody else, hey, help me out a little bit, but I got this. So I don't think it would have mattered how they played last night. The way Luka looked, the look in his eye, the competitiveness, it was all there. A superstar on display who has shown repeatedly what he is capable of in big spots.
Hell with that. Hell with that. It's not about whether or not it would have mattered. That's that in terms of the final outcome. It matters how you show up to perform. They lose the game. We're not crucifying them. We understood that this is a series that could go either way. We picked the Mavs, but we understood it could go either way. You're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Remember, they're up 31 on Dallas. Dallas comes back, takes the lead before they ultimately lose the game. We understand how this could go. The issue with the Clippers is the lifelessness. It's the lack of urgency in key pivotal moments. It's the boneheadedness. It's the lethargy. It's this. Listen. And I've said this when it came to the Los Angeles Lakers at times, throwing aside LeBron and AD because it wasn't applicable to them. Remember when I said Tim Legler and Andre, you was busy doing a marvelous, wonderful job with the NCAA tournament and stuff like that, and I was getting all over the Lakers. Christine remembers this, okay? I talked about how Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka, look, man, I literally told Jeannie Buss and them, told the Jeannie Buss, the Linda Rambises of the world, the Rob Pelinkas of the world. Hell, I would have told Magic Johnson had he answered my damn call. I'd have said, yo, what you need to do is grab a couple of these brothers and just drive them around L.A. and look at these clear blue skies and this sunshine and the palm trees and ask them, you want to be here? You know, there's plenty of other places to go. They ain't like this. You sure you want to be here? That's what Mr. Ballmer needs to do with some of these Clippers. But the problem is you can't. You know why you can't? Because he keeps falling for the okey-doke, investing in a Kawhi Leonard, who makes sure he does just enough to get his bag, to get those guaranteed dollars. And then after that, this brother ain't at work. Now, we know he's injured, and I understand that, and I'm not questioning that. But what I'm saying is when you combine the lack of availability with the refusal to be remotely marketable, you ultimately infuse a level of ambiance or whatever it is that dictates a culture. And that level of nonchalance, that lack of urgency, that distance from being marketable, from being promotable. Here's what happens, guys. And Legler, Andrea, and you know this because both of y'all smart as hell along with you, Christine. Y'all will think when I say this, it's going to hit home for you. See, when you don't focus on being marketable, when you don't focus on having an allure and a level of an attraction, you know what that ultimately invokes? That revokes a distance between you and your constituency, your fan base, or whomever it is. You live and let live, you go home. They know you're about that, so they don't have the urgency either. And it compromises the fervor, the adrenaline, the enthusiasm, and everything that comes with it to build the fan base. Look at Steve Ballmer courtside. I'm at Clippers games, y'all. I was there last night. The man is a billionaire. He don't need this. This is chump change to him. He don't need this. This man is at courtside, and half the time, he's showing more enthusiasm and more energy than the players he pays. Come on. Come on. That's what happened last night. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, I saw at least two people that looked like they were ready to throw up. I won't say their names, but they had brown bags. And wasn't no damn food in there. Wasn't no popcorn in there. They wanted to throw up, and I don't blame them. The Clippers last night, just last night, the Clippers were an utter disgrace. They should be ashamed of their damn selves. And if I'm Ty Lue, I want out. I want to get the hell out of there. I want to coach a team that I know is going to have players that's going to show up so I can prove my mettle as a coach, as opposed to being compromised by dudes that can clearly play. They ain't scrubs now, which is why I'm going off, because they better than that. These brothers can play. They ain't scrubs. Mm-hmm. I don't give a damn how great Luka Doncic is, Andrea, Tim. Clippers ain't that bad. they ain't that bad. They were disinterested. They looked like a bunch of brothers running around that was suffering from bloatedness and gas or something. It was horrible. It was horrible.
All right, we'll leave it there at bloatedness, gas, and barf bags and go over to the Eastern Conference. Okay, on Tuesday, the 76ers pulled off a miraculous come-from-behind victory fueled by Tyrese Maxey, who had 7 points in the final 28.9 seconds of regulations, which included back-to-back three-pointers, allowing Philly to erase a six-point lead and claim 112-106 overtime dub in Game 5, sending the series back to Philly with the Knicks up 3-2. But Tyrese Maxey's Game 5 heroics should have never happened, according to the NBA's last two-minute report, which said traveling should have been called on his four-point play late in the fourth quarter. I know Stephen A. is very happy about that one. So, Stephen A., I'm going to start with you on this one. Do you think that the two-minute report does more harm than good?
I think it's a waste of time. I don't like it one bit because what you going to do about it? All you're doing is saying to folks, we're willing to admit our mistakes. Well, congratulations. I'm so touched. I mean, bless their heart that they're willing to acknowledge that, you know, we missed this call or we missed that call or, you know, this mistake was made or whatever, but we're not going to do a damn thing about it. I mean, bless their wonderful hearts. What does it really amount to? And the thing about it is this. Yes, he traveled and all of that stuff, but I'm not sweating that. The fact of the matter is my Knicks mugged Maxey at the end of game two, and they got away with that. So this is what comes with the territory. I'm not tripping. Bottom line is Mitchell Robinson sitting there jumped his silly self in the air and fouled him on a three-point play that gave him a four-point play. I mean, that's really the situation and what it is. But having said all of that, I think here's the most important thing to point out. The sports gaming industry has had a profound effect on the world of professional sports, particularly the NBA, when it comes to officiating. Because since the additional money has been infused into the sport, we all know what that's about. You want to make sure you dot I's and cross T's. We don't want another Tim Donaghy situation. We don't want anything like that. You want to make sure we're on the up and up, that we have leaned heavily towards transparency and what have you. That is admirable. There's nothing wrong with that thinking. The problem is in implementing and instituting this two-minute report and all the stuff that comes with it. Ultimately, in our society, yeah, if you're telling us the problem, that's fine. Where the hell is the solution? If we work at a job, one of the things I pride myself in every day, and that's why I can butt heads at times with bosses and all of this other stuff. You know why? Because damn it, I'm about solutions. Ain't about just coming to you with a problem. I got solutions to those problems. And so if I'm coming to you with a solution, I'm trying to resolve something. I'm not just trying to whine and moan. And so to me, the two-minute report is about whining and moaning. It's not about solutions, Tim. It's not about solutions, Andrea. That's my issue. My issue is not the report itself. It's that once you reach its conclusion, what the hell are you going to do about it? And if you don't have a resolution in place to offset the mistakes and the mea culpas and the mishaps that ultimately occur, well, what good is it? All you're doing is trying to show us that you're the paragons of virtue, willing to admit your faux pas. Who gives a damn? If you don't have a solution, you got to have a solution. And that's not what we're seeing in the two-minute report. And that's my issue, Andre and Tim.
Stephen A., you're completely right. I've hated it from the day that I heard they were going to start doing this because I knew what this was going to lead to. You're talking about pointing out, first of all, you're going to end up pointing out things that nobody even saw in the first place, like the Tyrese Maxey dragging his pivot foot 2 inches. No one even picked up on that in the first place. So now all you're doing is making people aware of other stuff that the officials missed. And by the way, in this situation, I know, and I'm glad you're taking this approach, Stephen A., because I know there can't be a Knick fan out there that's going to complain about them missing the Tyrese Maxey travel with what happened in game two. At the end of game two with Tyrese Maxey getting fouled and not getting that call. So this is what it leads to. All it does is enrage fan bases even more because you're seeing it. There's no remedy to it. To me, it's almost like you go on Jeopardy, you miss the final answer, you go home, and the next day the producers call you and say, you know what, actually, you probably got that question right. We should have given that to you. And you go, well, wait. Where's my money? I don't get to keep playing? That's the problem. There's no remedy. All you're doing is pointing out things that actually make fan bases think, wow, wait a second, there were four calls missed in the last 2 minutes? I thought there was only one. Now you start to think that it really is some sort of bias going on with the officiating if the two-minute warning tends to lean heavily in one direction. That's the problem with it all. I'm perfectly fine with just play on, man. You get the short end of the stick some nights they get it right, some nights it benefits your team, some nights it doesn't. We move on, we get on to the next game, and you assume over the course of a series or a season, it all evens out that one team isn't consistently getting this treatment by the officials where they end up on the wrong end of these calls. It evens out in the end. Let's move on. The coaches need to know. I think that the league saw it. The players can know privately. I don't think this needs to be something for public dissemination. That's just my opinion.
I could not agree more. I understand the two-minute report. Send it to the coaches so they have an understanding. Send it to the coaches so they can keep a track record of what referees are officiating their games, and they can see if there's a track record of bias or if they have some grievances with the way games are called in relation to certain referees. That's fine. Let the coaches keep it. Let the coaches keep it to give their players a better understanding of when to do this and when not to do this. Because players call for reviews all the time. The point of the two-minute report is to help people understand the game. Fans are not using it in that way. I guarantee fans aren't watching the next game and saying, oh, that's a correct no call because Brunson initiated contact as he's dribbling down the floor because that's what happened in the last game. Fans aren't doing that. Fans don't need it. They're going to be upset about calls no matter what. The officials, for the most part, get it right. Send the report to the coaches so that the coaches and players can maybe understand a little bit more of what's going on in the referee's mind. And that's it. Fans don't need it.
One of the things before we go out on this segment, listen, you got game six tonight in Philadelphia. A lot of noise was made, obviously, about Knicks fans invading Philadelphia, whatever. I don't know if y'all heard the report. Sixers ownership and Fanatics owner Michael Rubin are teaming up to buy 2,000 game six tickets for Philly fans. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's in the aftermath of Dr. J imploring the one and only Julius Irvin, Dr. J, imploring Philly fans to show up or whatever. Interesting stat for y'all, all right? To show you how tight this series has been, to point to this two-minute report and how harmful it can be, do you know that in the first five games, the final score, you tally up total points, they're only separated by 2 points? Sixers, 534 points. Knicks, 532.
Wow.
In the five games. 2 points.
Wow.
Wow. That's what separates them. That's how close this is. So giving us the two-minute report with no resolution only serves as an irritant more so than anything else.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
May is
Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and First Take will celebrate all month long. Today, we're staying in-house and highlighting one of our ESPN feature writers.
My name is Aishwarya Kumar. I'm a feature writer with the Investigative and Enterprise Unit at ESPN. To me, AAPI Month means a lot of different things. It means coming together as a community and elevating the voices of Asian and Pacific Islander folks. The stories that animate me doesn't matter if you're from a rural part of Nebraska or somewhere in China or somewhere in India. I think I find connections, and that is because of the experience I had growing up in South India and moving 8,000 miles away from home to come to the US to pursue a career so ambitiously in journalism. And so I think that's what it means to me. It means elevating voices, it means reading new people, and you know, giving the space and the ability for us to sit through and dissect and understand and introspect on each of our histories and how it shapes us. And that's what this month really means to me.
Days after getting swept by the Timberwolves in the first round of the playoffs to end a season that started with championship expectations after assembling the big three of Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal, Suns owner Matt Ishbia said that his team was in a great position and their starting five will be back next season, and that, quote, the narrative that the house is burning down is incorrect. Suns GM James Jones also had some things to say specifically about Kevin Durant. Take a listen.
That's a constant focus for us is to continue to figure out how to maximize Kevin Durant. No one's done it yet. I believe we'll be the first team to do it. And when he's playing at the highest level, he makes us a really, really good team, and we're damn near unbeatable.
All right, Stephen A., I'm going to start with you on this one. What is your reaction to what Jones said?
Well, I was more looking to react to what Matt Ishbia said, the owner for the Phoenix Suns, because he was talking about the starting five coming back and what they were going to do and what they were capable of. And I just wanted to say that it was one of the most idiotic things I've ever heard from an owner in the NBA. What the hell was he watching? Not to mention the timing couldn't be more awful. Really, literally, you know, you just got swept. Okay, and those are the words. I mean, that's really, really enthusiastic to say to a fan base, hey, come on back. Come on and support us. You know, we just got swept, but we ain't changing anything. Everything's going to be just fine. We just got swept, but we're going to be all right. That's just dumb. I'm not saying he's dumb. Of course not. He's probably a very brilliant man. But that was a very idiotic statement on his part. And it appears to have trickled down to some degree with Mr. James Jones, who I'm very, very fond of. I like him a lot. I believe in him. I think for the most part in Phoenix, he's done a good job. But some of the things that he's saying about Kevin Durant makes no sense. One of my boys, Champ, who gets on my nerves, and I usually block him half the time because he makes no damn sense when it comes to LeBron James. He just seems like he's smoking something. But he does make a good point on many, many occasions when he talks about Kevin Durant probably needing a facilitator. And he makes a very valid point there. Let me tell y'all something about Kevin Durant. This dude that James Jones says, you know what? We are the ones that's going to figure out how to best utilize Kevin Durant. Tim Legler, Andre Carter, am I correct? Did Kevin Durant win two titles? He ain't two-time champion. I'm just trying to make sure I remember. I'm just trying to make sure. Isn't he a two-time league MVP? When I'm looking at it, doesn't he have four scoring titles? Only Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain have more. Doesn't he have two NBA Finals MVPs? Only Jordan, LeBron, Shaq, Magic, and Tim Duncan have more. Isn't he a career 27.3 point per game scorer, which ranks fourth all time in the history of basketball with a minimum of 750 games, trailing only Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, and Elgin Baylor? Isn't that Kevin Durant? I think it is. My numbers say it is. My stats tell me it is. My data tells me it is. I think that's Kevin Durant, who, by the way, has more NBA Finals appearances because, again, two titles and four seasons in Golden State, okay? He has more NBA Finals appearances in 16 years than the Suns franchise has in 56 years of existence. But somehow you, it's going to be you. You're going to be the one that brings out something in him at age 35 that we haven't seen over the last 16 years. Really? Really? There's certain things, and we get crucified for this, especially me, you know, because far be it for us to tell the truth. Far be it for us to tell the truth. I mean, far be it for us to sit up there and go like this. This is what the data shows. This is what the number shows. I'm just giving it to you. It's such a crime in this day and age. I don't know if you knew this, Tim Legler. I don't know if you knew this, Andrea Carter. Telling the truth is actually hazardous to your professional career and, dare I say, your livelihood. Simply pointing out the facts is a problem. But we going to sit up there and we going to listen to executives who literally just had broomsticks thrown in their face because they got swept. Look at a three-headed monster that's getting paid $150 million next year, 50-50 and 49.3 respectively, okay, and going to tell us we ain't changing nothing. We going to roll it back. Really? Wow. What a way to really ingratiate yourself with season ticket holders and that fan base in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm just so touched. I mean, maybe I need to step back and watch and learn a little something about marketing or whatever, because clearly they're seeing something that I don't.
What the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing and expecting different results. For Matt Ishbia to say we have this starting five and we're good is actually insane, because I don't think you're going to get any different results with this starting five. There are already too many question marks. Who's going to play the point guard? Is Bradley Beal going to be healthy? Those two question marks alone have to be solved if you keep this starting five. So that's the first thing. Matt Ishbia, you have a lot more to figure out than just small little tweaks. The thing with James Jones that I want to touch on, Stephen A., well, one, you said it, Kevin Durant has been unlocked. Two, for James Jones to say they're going to be the team to unlock him when they may have utilized him in the worst way all season long. Like, you're the furthest away from unlocking Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant took more corner threes than double his career average. What he averaged as far as field goal attempts from the three-point line in the corner on his career, he took double that this season. So to think you're going to unlock Kevin Durant when all this season you mostly kept him in the corners seems very far off to me. Both statements are far off. You had a lot more question marks in the starting five, and you're a lot further away than unlocking Kevin Durant than other teams he's been on. Those are my 2 points.
You guys are both so good, so smart, so many great points. I'm just going to expand on a little bit. And Stephen A., this is primarily for you, because Drea and I already talked about this on Get Up. And here's what, okay, I said. I'm going to say it again, because I think it's the most apt analogy. What Matt Ishbia said, I would compare to the survivors of the Titanic saying that's the best cruise they've ever been on. Okay, that's basically.
I was hoping you were going to say that again, Tim, because it's
amazing. That's basically what Matt Ishbia said. Okay, all right, that's what he said. Okay, he's basically saying, you're going to believe me or your lying eyes. That's really what he's saying to us. Okay, now to get to the James Jones point, and Dre, you brought up some good points. And first of all, you're talking about maxing out who he is going forward when you just had a sample size in which I don't think Kevin Durant was utilized to his best. What he's trying to do is trying to say, hey, the best yet to come, Kevin Durant. There's a lot more there for Kevin Durant. I don't think anybody really, number one, at this stage of his career is buying into it. Kevin Durant is still a great player, but you're not going to all of a sudden see something going forward that we have not seen from Kevin Durant that is better than what his previous 15, 16 years in the league have been. The guy won an MVP. He was at his best, I believe, in Oklahoma City, if you really wanted to see the absolute best version of Kevin Durant. They just couldn't break through and get that ring while he was paired up early on with Harden and Westbrook when they were just puppies, and then when it was just he and Westbrook trying to get past the Warriors. They couldn't quite get over the finish line. I think that was the best version that we've seen of Kevin Durant and that we will ever see of Kevin Durant. Doesn't mean he's still not great, but we're not going to all of a sudden see some reinvention of Kevin Durant. Now you're going to max out the efficiency of an all-time efficient player in this league and one of the greatest scoring talents this league has ever seen. That's not still to come. And that's what James Jones is trying to pitch, and that's what Ishby is trying to pitch to the fan base. And all of it adds up to, we need a two-minute report on what those two guys said. Let's see a two-minute report on that to get all the errors that were said in what Matt Ishby and James Jones had to say to their fan base.
And listen, I'm going to throw Isaiah Thomas out there. I'm going to throw Isaiah Thomas's name out there because that's my brother. I love him to death. Two-time champion, member of the Bad Boys Hall of Fame, and one of the greatest guards in the history of basketball. I know he has Matt Ishbia's ear. What's up, bro? I listen to you. Most people who know basketball listen. When Isaiah, to listen, you can sit up there and criticize Isaiah Thomas all you want to. When a man talks basketball, you got to listen. He makes a lot of sense. I think we both know that, Andrea, Tim. We both know that about Isaiah Thomas. I mean, Matt Ishbia does have your ear. What the hell going on? What the hell are y'all talking about? Stock options, popcorn companies or something? It clearly ain't basketball if he's uttering those kind of quotes. I mean, what's up, Isaiah? Somebody got to get in this man's ear. Somebody got to get in this man's ear. Because we can't expect James Jones to do it because James Jones works for the man. James Jones works for the man. I mean, I don't understand. We going to get the best out of Kevin Durant. What? I mean, what? This Kevin Durant we talking about here. We can be critical of Kevin Durant based off of some of the things that we have seen because no one's perfect. All of us have imperfections in dissecting and analyzing and evaluating the game. We can point stuff out. But from an overview perspective, let's understand something. This is one of the greatest plays we've ever seen in the history of basketball. This brother's a two-time champion, and regardless of the greatness of Steph Curry, regardless of the greatness of the Splash Brothers, Kevin Durant was the best player on that team. Now, damn it, he never seems happy. It always seems to be something wrong. It never seems to be enough. But that's about the lone criticism that you can give to him. He's a great dude. He's really, really smart. He's good people. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal player. Okay, and the fact is, when some executive, I don't give a damn who it is, comes out and says, we gonna get the best out of him, when you don't have a single championship to show in your franchise's history, and this brother's got two, along with two NBA Finals MVPs, it makes me wonder what the hell is in the air out there in Phoenix. Suns up. Suns up. I mean, what was Ishbia and James Jones hanging out with my man Bill Maher at Club Random? Because he gonna smoke some weed right in front of your face unapologetically. When I did a show, y'all, I did a show, Tim Legler. You'd have thought I was smoking some weed. I caught a contact high. Yeah, I ain't gonna lie to you. I'm sitting up there. I mean, he sat up there, had me on the show. I'm sitting there for 2 hours smoking weed the whole time, not giving a damn. All right. So some of the things I might have said, you can't hold me accountable. I had a contact high, okay? I wasn't smoking, but damn, it was all in my face. Maybe that's what happened to James Jones and Matt Ishbia. Maybe that's what's circulating in the air in Phoenix. I don't know what the hell is up, because I don't understand what the hell they were saying.
I'm sure that's exactly what went down. Hopefully we get some clarity on what they said very soon after all this backlash.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Can you remember the last time you had fun on a bike ride? Electric e-bikes, the number one seller of e-bikes in America, is here to bring fun and joy back to biking. The riders routinely say they feel like kids again riding these bikes. And one even said, I'm a 46-year-old man and can honestly say I haven't had this much fun on a bike since I was 10 years old. These e-bikes from Lectric are fast, up to 28 miles per hour. They offer lightweight, foldable e-bikes, so you can easily take them on the go to explore national parks, campgrounds, and more. Even if you don't have a truck, trailer, or bike rack, many of their models will fit in the trunk of a car. They also offer long-range batteries that provide over 65 miles of range, so you can explore further and longer. Head over to electricebikes.com today and take their bike quiz to find a model that's perfect for your needs. That's electricebikes.com. Have a great day, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Podcast. When you're on a business trip, you know what goes completely off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups, sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or you just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up, power your buys, your tries the right way, or de-stress with a little cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, avenging your 2023 conference finals loss, the Celtics took care of the shorthanded Heat last night, 118-84, to knock out their longtime rival in five games and advance to the Eastern Conference semis. It was Boston's first game without Kristaps Porzingis, who suffered a right calf strain that will keep him out for at least the next week. But Derek White was a bucket for the Seas, scoring a game-high 25 points two nights after he torched Miami for career best 38. Now, this was another blowout win for the Celtics. In a season, they have done that quite a bit. They have now won 11 games by 30 or more points this season, tied with the 1986-87 Lakers for the most in NBA history. Jay, I'm going to start with you on this one. Will the Celtics get challenged at all before the finals?
Before the finals? Challenged in a seven-game series? No, I don't think so. I think they'll be challenged in the finals, but I don't think they'll be challenged. I think they win in five. I think they win in six. I don't think they see a seven-game series until the finals. I just think the Celtics have the best roster. Even without Kristaps Porzingis, they're resting right now compared to most of these other teams that are still playing. And I just think they've got the pieces on both ends of the floor, plus the depth, which, as we're looking at a lot of these other teams, they don't have that. So I say no. I don't think they'll get challenged until the finals.
And Andrea, just a quick question here. I mean, I may be wrong. Are you the Andrea that Mike Miss? Frank Isola and my man and I'm sorry, I got brain lock here. Who does the show with every morning? Brian Scalabrine. I should say, because I know Brian too. Got a lot of love for both of them. You working in Boston a little bit, weren't you, Andrea?
No.
You were never working in Boston? Okay, because they got some sound they always playing, and I thought that was you. So I apologize. Anyway, I was getting ready to question it because I understand what everybody's saying about Boston. But without Porzingis and with their penchant to get in their own way from time to time, I could see an unnecessary seven-game series, Andrea. I could see Boston finding themselves in a situation where there's a couple of games during the series. Like, one game they get legitimately beat. Another two games they beat themselves. And they force a game seven unnecessarily before closing it out. Without Kristaps Porzingis, I could see that. Because without Kristaps Porzingis, you're going to rely on your athleticism, true. You'll probably shoot too many threes. You'll probably engage in too much one-on-one ball. I know that they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. They're arguably the best team in the NBA. Certainly their record says they're the best team in the NBA. But when you look at how they tend to get in their own way from time to time, that's where I see the possibility of a challenge before they get to the finals. I don't see them losing. Please don't get me wrong. But I do see the opportunity to challenge them and to make things a bit more interesting than they should be. I do see that with Boston. I'm not sure I yet trust Mazzulla, but I give credit where credit is due. He is the same coach that was down 3-0 and came back and tied at 3-3. And if Jason Tatum doesn't get hurt in the first minute of that Game 7 last year, it probably would have been Boston in the finals rather than Miami, which we all would have preferred to see because they would have been a better matchup against Denver. than the undersized Miami Heat. I'm also taking into account that they lose game two, Tim Legler, like you pointed out, when Miami shot the lights out from three-point range. And then the next thing you know, they were held to 88 points or less on 23% shooting from three-point range the rest of the series, which is exactly, Tim Legler, what you told us was going to likely happen when you were telling everybody pump the brakes, don't get caught up in the sauce, because we're looking at Miami. And so to me, I look at a team like Indiana interests me. And the reason why, despite their loss the other night, I think when they're flowing offensively, they can make things very, very interesting. I can't get over the fact that I watched them. I think it was game two. I watched them against Milwaukee. I'm literally watching the game for like 20 minutes. They didn't miss a shot in like 20 minutes. And I'm talking about four or five different people shot the ball, and everything was going in. I mean, these brothers can score. And I bring up that one element because it was indicative of what we've seen from the top-rated offense in the NBA this year. There's only one game over the course of 82 games where they were held under 100 points in the regular season. Once. Until a playoff game in game one when they were held under 94. Indiana can score. And I know I'm going to pick my Knicks to win this series in Philly. I know I'm going to pick my Knicks to win in the next series because I think Indiana's going to beat Milwaukee. But I got to tell you, I can't sleep on Indy. I can't sleep on Indy because of their ability to score. And when you do that against Boston, Boston can make things interesting because they do tend to get in their own way from time to time. That is how, Andre, a seven-game series could come about.
Stephen, I love your point on Indy. That's a team I've been talking about a lot this year because they don't get a lot of national attention. But when you watch their style of play and you say, man, that is a lot to deal with in a seven-game series because of the pace, the shooting that they have, the decision-making of Halliburton, you know, Siakam, what he's given them. But to the original question, will they be challenged? See, there's a lot of ambiguity in the word challenged. You know, how do we define that? I agree with Drea. I don't think they get pushed to a seven-game series. But, hey, you can play a five-game series and be challenged. Just ask the Denver Nuggets. I think they were challenged in the Lakers series. So it's really all relative to how these games play out. I do think that whoever comes out of the Orlando Cleveland series, which I think that's a team that you're going to have to work to play those teams. I think whether it's the Knicks or whether it's Philadelphia, you're going to have to earn it. Whether it's the Indiana Pacers, but whoever's left standing, I think can challenge Boston because I think Boston at times has this propensity to settle for three-point shots that allows you to stay in games. It allows you to guard them a little bit easier. So I do think they'll be tested significantly, but not pushed to a seventh game where we really feel at any point they're going to lose the series. I don't think we'll get there. Here's the one thing I will say, the one caveat to it, if Derek White keeps shooting like this, I don't think they're going to get challenged by anybody. Any of our descriptions or definitions
that's
of the word challenge, all three of us, they will not be challenged no matter how we define it if Derek White continues to stay in this kind of offensive rhythm.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we got to leave it there.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Can you remember the last time you had fun on a bike ride? Electric e-bikes, the number one seller of e-bikes in America, is here to bring fun and joy back to biking. The riders routinely say they feel like kids again riding these bikes, and one even said, I'm a 46-year-old man and can honestly say I haven't had this much fun on a bike since I was 10 years old. These e-bikes from Lectric are fast, up to 28 miles per hour. They offer lightweight, foldable e-bikes, so you can easily take them on the go to explore national parks, campgrounds, and more. Even if you don't have a truck, trailer, or bike rack, many of their models will fit in the trunk of a car. They also offer long-range batteries that provide over 65 miles of range, so you can explore further and longer. Head over to electricebikes.com today and take their bike quiz to find a model that's perfect for your needs. That's lectricebikes.com. Have a great day, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod.